You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
It's now 6 minutes past ten, and welcome to the studio, author and musician Gareth Shute.
Kia ora, atamani. Yeah, that video for that best track's great. It's got a boat made by David Parker, who used to run Little Monster Studios and used to produce the Great North albums and stuff, and now he has a big YouTube and Instagram following with things he builds, including that boat and various other things.
It's interesting because I was just surmising to myself, who was the David Parker who built that boat?
Oh, well, there's a lot of David Parkers.
Yeah,
there's the politician, there's and so on.
There's the David Parker who, I can't remember the name.
Oh, David Parker Project, you remember that 80s
right.
band?
Yeah, David Parker, I thought maybe he built that. Where's that video shot?
I'm not sure. I just know about the boat's provenance, not the. But it looks like it's right by a motorway, eh?
It's quite right a freaky by the motorway.
Yeah,
and it's not moving. There's not a lot of wind in that.
Yeah, at first you think it's so well lit. You think, is this in a studio? And then it pans back. It's like, whoa, they're like out in the water somewhere. So weird.
But
at night,
not moving. Yeah. Yeah, maybe anchored. But the sail is full. It's all very unusual.
Yeah, didn't want to lose Liz, I guess, to the seas of the Waitemata Harbour, I guess.
Hey, welcome. Congratulations on your new book.
Thanks.
You must be delighted.
Yeah, it's been quite a long process writing this book. The funny thing with short books, this is like a short history on purpose to be more accessible to a wide audience and just be more fast-paced so you can see the changes over time. But the trouble with writing a short book is it actually takes longer than a long book because you do have to do so much trimming, and it's such a kill your darlings process where you're like cutting out stuff, even bands you like and stuff. You're like, I've got to trim this right down. Like, what's really crucial to the story and what do people need to know to follow the whole path from like the late 1800s to now, you know?
The late 1800s to now is quite a long time span. So I'm going to ask you that. What was the criteria to be included in this book, space?
Well, I did have to create criteria. My two main ones for choosing artists were really either that they were wrote original songs, which wasn't a big thing in the 60s. You know, there was a whole industry of bands in the 60s who'd quickly cover an overseas song before the original arrived, and they'd have a hit and they'd be able to like tour the country on the back of this hit. And so it was a whole, industry. And my other criteria was, did they do well overseas? So obviously someone like Dinah Lee did just do covers mostly, but she was massive in Australia and she appeared on TV in the US and stuff. There's no way you could leave her out. And so there's a lot of people who might have done covers that need to be included. But yeah, I try to use those criteria on how much space to give them.
Yeah, it's a weighty book though. It's not a short tome. Songs from the Shaky Isles, A Short History of Popular Music in New Zealand. I guess Gareth Shute, out on Bateman Books. And it has a rhythm to it in its own way because it starts, obviously, as you say, at, I'll put in inverted commas, the beginning, and works its way through. So how did you sort the flow out?
Well, I mean, I jump around a bit. It's obviously not going to be completely chronological, so I did have to sort of cram things into little headings, which is why I guess musicians hate music journalists because they're constantly putting things in boxes, but you have to do that a little bit just to get a sense over time. But another guiding thing was just that idea of popular music, like when is a song actually accessible to everyone in society? Obviously, there was a whole tradition amongst Māori of waiata and haka and all sorts of different songs for different purposes, for tangi and so forth. But they didn't really go outside of the iwi in a way, and it was all a very oral history process. And same with the European colonists when they arrived. There was a lot of folk songs that went around, but it's only ones that really survived a long time could really be considered popular music, I guess. And it is quite far from our contemporary understanding of it. But I do, point out something like the Kaumate Haka is almost like popular music because it's so well known. Like, it's this amazing hit that was written like 220 years ago. It's like insane. Don't quote me on that number. That's just what I remember.
Okay. My maths is useless as well.
But yeah, so going from a situation where everyone just performed to their own community and their local hall or to their local iwi to where we had radio, and then finally we had recorded music. Oh, and sheet music as well. So I did try and cover that in a couple of chapters just to give that back history. But really, the majority of it, yeah, is recorded music.
Yeah. And Gareth, from the perspective of being a musician as well as an author and a journalist, because you write for Audio Culture and various other publications, but you're also a musician. So did you have some favourites that you wanted to actually focus on?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's part of the fun of something like this. I mean, I still wanted to give space for individual anecdotes and fun stories. So there were people like Tex Morden, the country music star who bussed all around New Zealand, but he ended up going to Australia and was like jumping train cars and joining the circus and stuff before he finally got on radio and became a massive hit. In fact, even got in trouble because he wrote a song called Sergeant Small about a policeman that he didn't like and stuff, and they banned it from radio. But he was so successful, he sold his own branded guitar. He had his own comic and stuff, and he'd advertised the guitar for beginners on the back and stuff. And then, yeah, in the 60s, like the person we're going to play a track by, Jay Epi, who, you know, he struggled here to start a music career, and so he ended up going to Australia, and via Australia he went to the US and actually recorded all these songs and had this massive hit, Putty Putty, which was actually based on a Maori waiata, and weirdly it was massive in Sweden. And I kind of thought, oh, that was just a quirky little moment in time, but actually if you look on Spotify and YouTube now, it adds up to like a million streams. So people in Sweden still love the song, and it's still on compilations of great Swedish hits from the 60s or whatever. But I thought we'd play The Creep because I really love this. This one's more appreciated by like garage rock people realizing, oh wow, there's some weird stuff came out by New Zealand songwriters.
Did he wrote this?
Yeah, he wrote this, and he recorded it while he was still in America. No, maybe he recorded it here. Weirdly, someone else covered it, and that version competed with his own one when it reached in Sweden. So weirdly, it was that sort of time where a good song would get covered, so it didn't become such a big hit, but it's a great tune.
Okay, I'm going to play it in a minute, and we're talking with Gareth Shute about his new book, Songs from the Shaky Isles, A Short History of Popular Music in New Zealand, and a chance for you to win a copy of it whilst you're with us at the moment. Just keep your ears open.
Got a new dance, a brand new beat, a crazy dance, they call it the creep. You clap your hands and move your feet, so come on girl and do the creep. Everybody creep, come on creep, yeah baby creep. We're doing your arms way out of sight, you wiggle your hips, keep on that beat, so come on girl, you're doing the creep. Everybody creep, come on creep, baby creep, we're doing the creep, a crazy beat, a crazy treat, you're doing the creep. Every city for miles around, and all those little country towns, every boy and girl all over this world is on that beat, they're doing the creep. Yeah, come on creep, everybody creep, yeah baby creep, honey creep, on that beat, that crazy beat, they're doing the creep. Yeah, come on.
BFM, and that's The Creep. I had no idea that Jay wrote that
Tumbling Down. Yeah, he wrote Tumbling Down by Maria Dallas when he came back to New Zealand. Yeah, there's a long story on Audio Culture about Jay Epi's career actually, and how it didn't end that well, but yes, he had some great songs over time. So that sort of act that I do want to highlight in Songs from Shaky Isles, to my new book, because it Yeah, I think there's great songs out there that people can rediscover and realise, oh, these are the New Zealand written ones, and maybe not focus on some of the covers as much, I guess.
Right. So who, for the person who may go out and find this book in various retail outlets, so who's it really aimed at?
Well, that was the thing. I guess there's been so many books lately that have been focused on the music nerd, like, you know, the first 8 years of Flying Nun, or like a 33 and a third book about eyeliner, or, you know, a whole book on deep grooves. I mean, me personally, I lap all those up, but I don't think the person who's generally vaguely interested in New Zealand music or interested in New Zealand history is going to be able to dig into those. Whereas this is something just the casual person who is interested in New Zealand music, cultural history, I guess, could read, you know. I've made it enough sort of anecdotes to be fun, but then, and moving fast enough that you can actually see the progression over time, because the trouble with those in-depth books is sometimes it's like, oh, what happened? Like, what was the overall current of this? Like, what was, that Flying Nun book, Needles and Plastic, obviously, oh, yeah, we understand it's important and all these different bands, but which is the most important and what was their overall impact and stuff? You can't see the wood for the trees, I guess. So unless you already kind of know and have an idea in your mind, it's hard. Whereas this, my book, Songs from the Shaky Isles, is more, yeah, just for the general reader, lots of photos.
And yeah, lots of wonderful photos.
The size of a novel sort of thing. So you can just read it on a Sunday morning rather than, yeah.
And it took me a while to work out who was on the cover, but it's Bo Runga.
Yeah, Bo Runga on the cover. I mean, that era was so important, you know, at the late 90s. There was a real turning point. I mean, as you know, there was like just no New Zealand music being played on radio, and you were part of the effort to try and change that in the 80s and 90s. And Stella, the Feelers, Bec Runga just totally changed the game. I mean, they had behind them like NZ On Air and these different changes that had come through that supported that, you know, Music Month that Kiwi Music Action Group started, and then New Zealand Music Commission picked up, and so on and so forth, were all these industry things behind them that gave them that support. But man, they blew up big. Stella sold like 75,000 albums. And yeah, it's just hard to imagine like how big those acts were in that day.
I saw Bo recently as part of the Atomic Show.
Yeah, yeah, and that they did that great medley at the Music Awards as well. So yeah, it's great to see her still playing, even though her main focus is probably that jewellery business, which seems to be doing well.
This next track that you've picked, Gareth, Through the Southern Moonlight by Rocking Horse, I think I know it word for word. It must have had a lot of airplay.
I guess this song's representative of what I was saying before, is that if you step back, you can see the craziness of how outside changes affected the music industry so much. And in this case, I just wanted to highlight how the changes in alcohol law changed things. Like, you know, from the early 1900s to like 67, there was 6 o'clock closing, and you legally couldn't have a beer while you watched a band in a bar. There was not a bar to have one in. And then when it opened up, there were these, the places that seemed to have bands were often like pubs, which are public bars of hotels. And the reason for that goes all the way back to the 1800s, where to get a liquor license, they made it at one point that you had to have 6 rooms of accommodation, because they wanted to encourage more places for people to live. And so when they opened up the laws and bands started playing in bars, they ended up playing in these pubs. And then actually, the breweries kind of took over the whole scene, where Lion Brewery spent millions each year running all these bands around. They called them like distillery, or when they wanted to sell Jim Beam, they called them Beam. Beam. The band was called Beam after Jim Beam.
They
had one called Pilsner.
Okay.
Yeah, so the breweries kind of, Lion Brewery especially, ran the whole music live scene for a while, to the point where Rocking Horse, this band we're going to play, they won Best Single of the Year at the Music Awards for this song. Then after the show, they realised, oh, we've got, after the celebrating at the Music Awards, they realised, oh, we've got a gig tonight. And so they went to the bar and they were late and they were a bit drunk, and the bar manager complained and said, you guys, and being unprofessional, complained to Lion and got them banned from the Lion circuit from the year. So they are like the best single of the year, and then they were banned. It's like just crazy backwards how it was for a little while, yeah.
Okay, Rocking Horse and Through the Southern Moonlight. This texter says, Stella are playing the biggest pub gig in the world tonight.
Go along and have fun.
Yeah, okay.
That'd be great.
This is Through the Southern Moonlight. Come on. Da 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 da, we can go. You know it, Gareth, don't you?
Didn't know I'd have to sing it.
It's Rocking Horse and Through the Southern Moonlight. Playing that this morning, I'm talking to Gareth Shute about his new book, Songs from the Shaky Isles, A Short History of Popular Music in New Zealand, out on Bateman Books right now. And I think it's like $39.95, Gareth?
Yeah, cheap colour photos.
Just actually.
Get a lot for that in the modern world.
Yeah, given what you get for your $39.95, it's a fast-paced big picture account.
Yep.
That's what it says on the back. And should we work out this? Because I'd like to give away a copy of it. Bateman have actually very kindly donated a book for us to give away to the BFM audience.
Yeah, for sure.
So you have to have a B card.
Yeah.
That's our first criteria. but would you like to set the question? And we'll do it by text.
Text in with your B card number and which musician appears on the cover of the book.
Okay, who appears on the front cover of Songs from the Shaky Isles?
Yep.
If you were listening, you might have heard us talk about that. and should we go for the sixth texter through.
Yeah, sixth texter through. Let's see.
Number six is always good.
We'll let you know if we get slow and we get close. We'll tell you how it's running.
Very good. Okay, 5-3.
But in the meantime.
5395 is the text number here, your B card number, and the sixth texter through was the name of the artist that features on the front cover of Songs from the Shaky Isles. It'll be yours. Bateman have said they'll send it out to the person, which is
yeah,
nice.
Yeah, so we'll let them, yeah.
Okay.
Somehow we'll get, oh, maybe put your address as well. Oh, no,
oh,
we'll
yeah.
work that out later.
That's a very good idea.
Others yeah, put your address as well in the text if it's not too late.
If it's not too late, put your address on the text.
Yeah, that'll be easier. Then we won't have to text you back somehow.
That's very wise, Gareth. You obviously yeah. know what you're doing here. Okay. Yeah, let's wrap up with another track that you've chosen and an artist that features in the book, Lady Hawk.
Yeah, I just wanted to jump forward very briefly and say the book does go up to the present day digital age. Obviously, it was very hard in the last chapter to decide who to include and who not to include. But yeah, I thought I'd just talk about Lady Hawk because that was one of the first times I really saw how the power of the internet would make New Zealand music able to reach an international audience like that, you know, and how timing is so important as well, because originally she was in a rock band, like a garage rock band that was just on that cusp of that wave of like the Datsuns and everything. But they arrived too late to really take advantage of that whole wave. But and she moved into kind of 80s synth music just as Enemy were getting really into that style of music. So it's all kind of timing. Like I think there were garage rock bands like the Czechs who arrived just too late for that wave, but she kind of switched path just at the right time. But I really think yeah, like, I just remember in around 2010 watching on MySpace as her numbers just went crazy, and then you began to see, oh, on YouTube you can really see how famous someone is overseas or how much success they're having. Her numbers blew up even before she started charting, and then finally the song went, like, number 16 in the UK and number 16 in Australia, but it was like, oh, right, now if someone hears of a band, like, if you play a show or someone talks about you on the radio in the UK, you could look up on MySpace or YouTube and you find the artist instantly. And it was this whole new way of music discovery. And even though that's kind of seen as toxic now in some ways because Spotify's got so many bad sides to it, it is great. I mean, compared to the 90s when you had to try and get a CD into a store overseas for someone to hear your music, and there was like probably 12 or 100 gatekeepers between you and that goal of just getting that CD so someone could get your music.
So true.
And now they can just get it. If they hear of you, then they can get it.
And they can get it free.
And they can get it free, but hopefully they'll come and see you play live. Or like,
yeah, is it worth it though? Like, are you really going to make the money from playing live unless you're big?
Yeah, we won't get into the ups and downs.
Come on, let's get into that. No.
Yeah.
I have a text machine and I have a person who's the sixth texter through. It's Ellie.
Ellie, well done. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you, Ellie. And I've got your address. And thank you, everybody who texted in. And the answer was
Bo-runga, yeah, as discussed. Yes, it's a bit of an ethereal shot. But yes, I didn't want to overstate what the book was about, so it's kind of a more atmospheric one, but she liked it, so
yeah, it's been fantastic. Beautiful.
And she's playing tonight. And yeah, check out my book, Songs from Shaky Isles. And yes, it goes right up to the digital age, and Lady Hawk's story is kind of emblematic of that, so I thought we'd go out on that track.
Yes, and for those who want to come to your book launch, you've got two.
Oh, good point. Well done. Well done.
One at the Time Out
Bookstore. Yeah, I've got a low-key one at Time Out Bookstore, Friday, 6:30. Rodney from Good Shirt's going to play a couple of songs, and I will give you a beer. The more sort of big public one is flying out on Saturday, 2 p.m. next week, and my band The Golden Geese is going to play, and we're going to do some classic Kiwi tracks. Going to do Tumbling Down by Maria Dallas that we discussed earlier, and a couple of others. So yeah, it should be real fun.
Great. So
the book's out on Monday, but you can order it now from the Time Out website if you are excited to get in your hands right on the day.
Oh, very, very well done. Nice little spiel there. Time Out Bookstore book launch on Friday night, the 8th of August with Rodney Fisher, 6:30.
Yep.
And then on Saturday, 2 p.m., 1 week away, at Flying Out with your band, The Golden Geese.
Yep.
and playing. What else? I just want to know what else is on your set list.
Oh, I don't want to give it away too much. But I'll give you...
Is it all New Zealand covers?
Yeah, it's all four New Zealand covers from Overtime. There's a bit of Chris Knox, one of his classics.
I'm looking forward to
his
book, the most obvious one. The book that's out on Chris.
Yeah, that'll be cool. That's kind of another one that covers more than just music culture. Like, he's such an interesting character. But yes, Shane Carter movie at Flying, the International Film Festival. So many, I think it's a great time to look back on our great history. Yeah.
Gareth, thank you so much. Gareth Shute, Songs from the Shaky Isles, out on Monday.
Yep.
At all good bookstores.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll end with Lady Hawk and My Delirium.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.